Okay, play it again, Adam. Composer and lyricist Adam Gettle musing on the opening of your show, The Light in the Piazza. Actually, Adam, when I last heard you do that, exactly that, mm-hmm. We were in your studio in New York and The Light in the Piazza hadn't even opened there, and you were playing on your grandfather, Richard Rogers' piano, which I remember kneeling on the floor and embracing it briefly.
We ask all of our guests to genuflect.
Exactly. And here we are at the brand new state-of-the-art Curve Theatre in Leicester. It's taken a while to get to the UK. This is a pitiful thing. That quality of music that this show has, this yearning, searching quality, which I think has been in all your work, including, you know, Floyd Collins, the Hill music of Floyd Collins. What is it about you that just so loves to wander like that and almost prefers to journey than to arrive?
I think that there's a kind of physical reaction that I have personally to sounds like that, harmonies like that, and a certain kind of chromaticism. When you can feel direction inside of the harmony, something is moving in a direction and there's tension in the harmony, that does something to me physically. And I guess it's sort of a kind of oxygen.
In this score, I mean, the last time I remember a score that was so full of yearning was actually your grandfather's Carousel, which I still think was his finest hour, really. Was it the novella of The Light in the Piazza or the later movie with Olivia de Havilland that first drew your attention? What connected you to it as a subject for a musical?
Well, I had been looking for a love story, but I didn't, because I wanted to be able to not pull my punches and to be completely earnest and sincere in delivering a very romantic score. So I was looking for a vessel for that that wasn't all tied up in a bow, that wasn't completely what one might expect. And so The Light in the Piazza, and it was the book that I read. I didn't see the movie until after the show had opened in New York, out of a kind of superstition. The book I read just once, and I took very careful notes, because I like to be in the position that the audience is in throughout the process of writing. I just want to remember the things that mattered to me. If I look at it too much and layer on and extract therefrom, I lose my audience perspective.
The show, the score, is suffused with this wonderful light that one sees in Florence, but it's also the light that shines from the characters as well, from the mother Margaret and from the daughter as well, who we're not going to give away any of the plot details here, because I think people should be surprised by the revelations in the show. But that light, that quality, I mean, music, I suspect, comes very easily to you, and probably the words less so.
Certainly
the music comes first.
The music always comes first, because that's the resolution of the musical language to me is infinite, and I sort of compose myself into a terrible corner, but I feel that I've been very faithful to the characters as I understand them. And then the last process is always to try to dig myself out of that corner by finding appropriate words. I mean, there's so many ways of saying I love you in music, but in English, they've pretty much all been used. So it's about context. So I try to create a very faithful context that has a lot of detail emotionally, and then sort of scrap my way out with words.
And they're very poetic anyway, but sometimes your characters just can't reach for words, mm-hmm. and they just sing this kind of ecstatic
vocal. Sometimes my lyricist can't reach for them either.
I mean, that song, Say It Somehow, where they go into this kind of vocalese where you know, the kind of emotional stakes become very high and no words are adequate to express what they're feeling. I mean, that's something that you and no one else in my experience has done in musical theater.
Well, I don't know. I imagine someone must have done it, and certainly in the operatic tradition, it's part of that tradition that,
I guess Maury Yeston's Nine was a good example, maybe, yeah.
And also set in a kind of Italian milieu, but when you have gone as far as you can go in articulating an idea, again, it brings us back to the resolution of music, which I think is a great deal higher than language, at least as language is handled by me. Mm-hmm. that there comes a point where the vowel gets stretched, the thought gets stretched so far that it is no longer actual English or a language, it's simply energy.
Mm-hmm. You've a lot of things in this show. There's joy and there's sadness, I would say, in equal measure, but there's energy in both. And I remember when we spoke once before, you were talking about a favorite Rodgers and Hart song of yours,
Glad to be Unhappy.
And you know, in that song, the line "I'm so unhappy" has the most ecstatic musical mm-hmm. phrase. Indeed. And I just wondered whether that kind of thinking colored what you did in Piazza, because
it absolutely does. And I think the sound of ecstatic romantic fulfillment and bitter romantic loss is the same sound. Mm. It's just contextualized differently. Mm. In the heart, in our experience of getting or losing that level of romantic sort of achievement, of feeling. The feeling in oneself, I think, is really the same feeling. It's just contextualized differently. So I tried to make that part of the kind of strategy of the score.
They're so close together, those two mm-hmm. polarities
yes.
in this show. And it is so emotional. I mean, it's an extremely emotional show. And I defy anybody not to be awash at the ending, which again, I'm not going to give away,
right.
But I think this is true. What do you see as the real central factor in the show? What really pressed your button with it and made you, is it Margaret's?
Insofar as why I wrote it?
Yeah.
Margaret is the lens for the piece. She's also the spokesperson for the piece, and crucially important as far as the narrative arc of the piece. And important for other ways, but to me personally, I latched on to Clara from the beginning because Clara is a universal character to me. She was arrested at a crucial point in her romantic development. She has been held or suspended on the edge of the romantic potential of life, of our gift of being on the earth just once, that she's suspended there. And I think we all are somewhere inside of ourselves, still looking and wondering and hoping that we will receive that great gift of that, you know, that our romantic ambition, you know, is looking for. You know, and she's been arrested there. Those of us who are not in her particular situation, may suppress it and may have many practical and venal grown-up concerns that dull those feelings. But I think in all of us, we are all where she is. So to me, she's a universal character, and her predicament is very metaphorical in that we all think that we all know there is something not quite right about us. We just don't really know what it is. And if we did, maybe we could try to fix it, but we just don't, we can't identify it. And in any relationship that you are are heading into, or maybe extricating yourself out of. You just, there is that thought of, what is it about me? I wish I could figure it out. And that's sort of where she is, in a way that's sort of manifest.
If that doesn't intrigue the audience, I don't know what will. Adam, you work at your own pace, and you've delivered two amazing shows, both so different from one another, but with your own voice, very distinct. What are you working on? Are you working on something new?
Well, I did actually, as Piazza was coming into New York, embark on another project, which sadly didn't come to be. Mm-hmm. It was a musical adaptation of The Princess Bride. That wonderful, wonderful movie and the wonderful book by William Goldman. Mm. And there were sort of practical, contracty hurdles that we did not clear. Mm. So I wrote about 2/3 of that music.
Wow.
And so it sits in a drawer waiting for the right fairy tale adventure. So I did spend about 2.5 years on that since Piazza. And now I've got three new things, and I'm going to just sort of say I'm excited about them, and they're just as far afield from what I've done in the past as Piazza is from Floyd Collins.
Mm-hmm. Great. Seeing the show again in this state-of-the-art theater, and seeing a new interpretation of it, a new vision of it, I mean, that must tug at things inside you, because you live so long with the first production, and
it doesn't. I mean, it tugs in a good way. It's a lovely thing to come and be with a brand new group of people who are really enthusiastic about the work and who are also gifted. And what a stunning facility this is. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really is. The proscenium is lavishly wide, and the acoustic in the house is terrific, mm-hmm. better than New York. Mm-hmm. By far. That's exciting to me, being a music wonk.
Well, it's I was saying to Paul Kerrison, you know, that the great thing about this show is that it's with a 15-piece band, it is virtually acoustic. I mean, even if you're using miking, that was one of the joys mm-hmm. of it, that we're so
yeah.
used to hearing samples
yes.
and keyboards.
No, it's really great. And we hardly have to amp the orchestra at all. In fact, I think by the end of yesterday, we really weren't, which is important for the piece, because the piece operates in its detail. That is where it is moving. If this piece gets pushed out and amped up, the detail disappears, and then the story disappears too. What we care about disappears. It's all in asking the audience to lean forward. So in a way, the less amplification, the better.
Well, one, speaking of savoring the moment or the essence of the moment, one song in the score really, really stands out for me, and that's Dividing Day. Because it encapsulates such very, very strong emotions in a very short space of time. And it is in a sense, very understated as well. I think of a parallel with it with Sorry Grateful in Company, mm-hmm. Stockheim's Company, which is a song about the ambivalence of marriage. Mm. And here's a song about, you know, the feelings that a marriage has never really worked, and when did it start to go wrong? Can you just talk about that song a bit? Because the lyrics are just amazing, and we're going to hear it in a minute with
Well,
Lucy.
I mean, the song came to be over a period of time while I watched in Soho in New York. The buildings are very they're high ceilings and big open windows, and it's a bit of a goldfish bowl. And my neighbors across the street, with whom I'd become very close, who were married and had children. Began to suffer some problems in their marriage, which I witnessed in sort of a silent way from across the street. You can tell from body language, you can tell from all of that. I didn't need to know what they were saying, but I could tell things were not going well. And about a year and a half later, they had split after having been together for 10 or 12 years. And so it was, that's what I watched, and that's what I based the song on.
Mm. Mm.